The Eternal Light.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, because the lamps burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Two Worlds, was written by Mark Siegel. It's adapted from the book of the same name written by David Deitches and published by Harcourt Brace and Company.
In the almost 9 years that I sojourned in the United States, I grew depressingly accustomed to a certain conversation. The form of this exchange, to which I was repeatedly subjected, might vary, but the content was always the same. An American friend or one of my students at Cornell would say,
Professor Deitches, they say you come from Scotland.
That's right, Edinburgh.
Really? From Scotland?
Is there anything so strange about it?
No. But I'd heard that you were Jewish, that you were a rabbi's son.
That puzzles you?
Your father was a rabbi in Scotland?
Why, yes, great. Many people, in fact, used to call him the chief rabbi of Scotland.
Really? The chief rabbi of Scotland?
Find that so amusing?
Well, it is comic, Professor Deitches. There's just something comic about a Scottish rabbi.
But why?
Because they're two different things. A rabbi is a rabbi. And Scotland, that's kilts and kippers and oatmeal.
And that's what amuses you?
I'm sorry, Professor Deitches, I don't mean to laugh. It's just that when I think about it, I get a picture in my mind.
What kind of picture?
It's ridiculous, Professor Deitches, but I can't help it. The picture that pops into my head is of a rabbi wearing a kilt.
My father, of course, did not wear a kilt, nor did I, nor did any of the 400 families that made up the Jewish community of Edinburgh. But if some of my American friends tend to find a certain amusement in the idea of a Scottish Jewish community, I can at least understand the reason, the underlying reason. I think it is perhaps because in the Scotland of my youth, two strong traditions came face to face. Perhaps you'll understand it better if I tell you about those growing years and my father's effort to bring those two traditions, the Scottish and the Jewish, into working balance. When I was a boy, I lived not in one world, but in two. One was the weekday world of Edinburgh, the world of the great castle on the hill, the world of our house in Millerfield Place, the world of the meadows, the large park across Melville Drive, where my schoolmates played cricket, spent timeless hours contriving those activities, compounded of curiosity and mischief, which shaped the street life of Edinburgh.
David! Hey, David!
Hi, Willie!
Will you play a game of kick the can?
Well, I've been playing it all day, Willie.
Well, there's a stack of wood to climb.
Well, the parkie will catch us if we do.
The parkie? Who's afraid of the parkie? He can't catch us.
It's getting late anyway, Willie. I've got to go home.
Home? The pipers coming in the meadows?
The pipers?
Oh, they're coming out. Do you hear them?
Aye, I hear them, Willie. Come along.
Did you say you had to get home?
I do, Willie. It's late. But it's never too late to go hear the bagpipes.
Willie. That was one world, the world of the bagpipes. And side by side with it was the other, the world of my family and of my father, the world of the old synagogue in Graham Street, the world of shining candlesticks and clean linen, of Hebrew study and of prayer, the world of our ancient Jewish tradition.
David?
Yes, Father?
Tonight you may lead us in grace.
All right, Father. Shall I begin now?
Yes, David.
And as we sang the familiar Shir HaMa'alot at the beginning of the after-dinner grace, the meadows and Marchmont and Arthur's Seat and the castle on the hill were forgotten, and we were back in a world which stretched unbroken back through the Middle Ages to ancient Palestine. But were they really forgotten? The two worlds in my childhood were not really separate. Or if they were, I moved freely and easily between them. And this was a tribute to my father, whose life was given to the effort to bring my two worlds together. When we lived in Millerfield Place, we were a family of five, a close-knit family. There was Lionel, my older brother, and Sylvia, my younger sister. There was my mother, of course, seeing to it that we all left for school polished and scrubbed each morning. But when I think back to the days when I romped through the Edinburgh streets with all my senses wide open, in the background, what I remember best is my father writing in his study, setting out to attend a meeting or conduct a service, or above all, by a thousand means, reminding us of our identity and our heritage. He might say suddenly at the dinner table,
David, if you were hiking in Palestine and wanted to find a place to spend the night, how would you explain yourself in Hebrew to a passerby?
Hayesh bo makom legur? Would that be right?
No, David, not unless you plan to stay a good while. Lagur means to sojourn, not to lodge for a night.
And I would try again until I got it.
Hayesh bo makom lalum?
Right, right, David. A thousand times right.
We were never quite sure, Lionel or I, when a study period might begin or end.
Lionel, David, come into my study. It's time you learned some Talmud.
Or Father might say about something we'd never studied.
What's that, David? You say you don't know Rashi's commentary on Genesis by heart?
And then with a sudden recognition, add...
On the other hand, why should you? I never taught it to you. Really, David, you must get yourself a better teacher.
I don't believe I could have had a better or less systematic teacher than my father. His concern for our education was limitless. But the deepest education we had from Father, I think, came by precept and example. And the range of that precept and example covered the whole spectrum from good humor to the depths of his faith. I can recall many incidents of my youth, but those which come to mind most vividly are the moments in which my two worlds met, as they often did, in the house in Millerfield Place.
Yes, come in.
There's a letter in the post for you. It's addressed to Robert S. Deitches, Esquire.
Robert Deitches? Well, that's odd. You sure it's for me?
Quite sure.
But it should say Rabbi Solis Deitches if it's for me.
Father, have you ever heard a Scotsman say the word rabbi?
Of course. He'd as often as not say Robbie.
Well, there you have it, Father. Huh? Robbie's short for Robert. Someone's being formal with you.
You mean?
Mm-hmm. Robbie S. Deitches. Translation, Robert S. Deitches, Esquire. You've lost a title and gained a name.
Among the Jewish and Scottish communities, with or without his title, my father was both loved and respected. His position in these two worlds was reflected in the many kinds of visitors who found their way to our house in Millerfield Place. I remember one visitor well.
Robbie Deitches, I've come to extend an invitation to you.
I get a great many of them, friend. But I'll be glad to oblige, if my calendar will let me.
It's to give the oration at our Burns Festival.
Why, I'd be proud to.
But I'm not much of an authority on Byrne.
Ye be the Robert H.'s that writes all those bonny letters to the Scotsman, there you know.
Yes, I do write letters to the editor of the Scotsman from time to time.
We all those bonny words?
Well, yes.
Well, Robert H.'s, it's a month or more to the lecture. Surely in a month a man of your learning can become an authority on Burns.
I think my father must have taken great pride in being asked to lecture on Scotland's national poet. Of more interest to me at the time, however, was a lecture on poetry given to an audience of one.
Father?
I remember the night well. My father used to climb the three flights of stairs every night to say good night to us. But there was something special about that particular time.
David, I've been reading the poem you've been writing in the copybook I got you.
You have? Why?
Because I'm interested in your progress. That's why.
They're just little verses, Father. I just write them as a kind of a game.
I know you do. But they're very talented. They're very good for one of your age, David.
Thanks, Father. However what, Father?
You're a little weak on technique. For example, this line here, you see it?
Sure, I see it.
It goes, di-da, di-da, da-dee, da-dee, di-da.
Is there anything wrong with it going that way, Father?
Well, if it's iambic, David, it should go, di-da, 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 di-da.
Father, when I write those verses, I don't think if it's iambic or anything else. I just write them.
I know that, David. But it would help you to write better poetry if you knew the rules of meter and of feet. I'll teach them to you if you like.
You will?
Of course I will. You know, David, it would be quite a wonderful thing. Quite a wonderful thing if you were to become a well-known poet.
It would?
Someone who was read and appreciated by people all over Scotland. Quite a wonderful thing.
Well, I guess it would. But why, Father?
Why? Well, to start with, it's always wonderful when a man can create something which inspires or lifts or educates other people. And then also...
Also what, Father?
Also, think of how proud the congregation of the synagogue would be. Just think of how proud they'd be.
The congregation of which my father was the spiritual leader sometimes puzzled me by what I considered a lack of decorum in its services. My father worked hard to improve the discipline of the service, but he did so with understanding and good humor. And he would try to convey his human understanding to me.
I still don't understand why they don't try to sing together, Father. I mean, instead of each one going his own way.
It's because each member of the congregation considers himself an individual, David. An individual in the presence of his maker.
But how about old Mr. Rifkin? Why does he always have to sing one bar ahead of the cantor?
To show he knows the words and music better than the cantor, I suppose. That's just human, David. And the synagogue should be a human place.
What I was proudest of at the synagogue were my father's sermons. He was a great preacher, and without the aid of any kind of note could build up from exposition of the day's text through illustrative anecdote to a climax of eloquence I have rarely heard equaled. Only once, apart from the very few occasions when he was absent through illness, do I remember his not preaching on a Sabbath. It was on a cold February morning.
My friends, as some of you undoubtedly have noticed, the central heating has broken down and it's quite cold in the synagogue.
Quite cold was an understatement. The small congregation was shivering in its seats.
For me to do so, it would be the course of wisdom for me not to preach and for us to conclude the service and return to our homes, which, I trust, are a trifle warmer.
I remember walking home with my father that day through the snow-covered streets of Edinburgh and turning to him to say,
I'm sorry you didn't preach today, Father. I missed your sermon. I really missed it.
Perhaps I didn't understand then as well as I do now why he was so pleased. But I can remember clearly his sudden smile and the warmth with which he turned to me.
Did you, David? Did you really? Then, in a way, I'm glad I didn't deliver it.
I used to think that my father was the only one who really understood me, and that I was the only one who really understood my father. It is a common failing among sons, I suppose. At that time, I had formed an image of my father as a lonely idealist, who would be sustained by the knowledge that one at least of his children was of a similar habit of mind, a serious thinker, or at any rate someone of moral and intellectual distinction. As a matter of fact, I found myself developing an almost paternal attitude towards both my parents.
Father! Father!
What is it, David?
I want a bursary at school, a scholarship for next year.
Why, that's wonderful, David. Congratulations.
Thanks, Father. I knew you'd be pleased.
Of course I'm pleased. But that's not the important thing. You should be pleased with yourself.
Well, I am, of course. That is, just a little.
A little? I felt as if I had elevated the reputation of every Jew in Scotland. That was how it was. There was a constant ebb and flow, a rhythm between the two worlds of my youth. Only occasionally did the two worlds fail to intermesh with ease. One such face-to-face meeting of our two worlds came when he had no housemaid to turn the gas on the Sabbath, a day when the making of fire was forbidden by our religious practice.
David!
Yes, Father?
You'd better fetch the message boy from Cameron's around the corner.
I would run to Cameron's, where we used to get some of our groceries, and induce their messenger boy, message boy was the term we used, to return to the house with me.
You wish me to come in and light the gas?
That's right.
Well, I didn't understand, but I'll come.
And he did come, often. But once, I remember, he turned to my father as he lit the stove.
See, it's quite easy.
Of course.
You just turn this wee handle, then put the light to the wee holes.
I know how to do it.
You do? Then why didn't you do it yourself?
Because this is the Jewish Sabbath, my son, and it's forbidden to strike a light.
It's the Sabbath day? Saturday, the Sabbath day?
That's right.
The boy's jaw dropped, and he looked at my father sideways. What the rest of Edinburgh thought about the Dyches family, I cannot say for sure, but this I know. Cameron's message boy regarded us as quite mad. Like Cameron's message boy, I and my brother Lionel and my sister Sylvia sometimes question the relation of ritual to everyday life, or in our case, to practical ethics. Talk was neither rationed nor disciplined in our family, and one of us would say,
Father, couldn't a man who didn't go to the synagogue regularly still be a good man?
And Father would answer in perfect good humor,
Yes, I suppose he could.
One of us was bound to carry it further.
Then why all the rules, Father? Why all the laws?
Sometimes my father would smile and say simply,
You'll understand when you're older.
But on other occasions he might ask,
David, you ask if a man who didn't go to synagogue regularly could be a good man.
That's right.
Well, how do you know what's good and what's evil?
Anybody knows that, Father.
No, David. Not unless he accepts the law as a guide. If a man hopes to lead a truly full and satisfying life, he must do it within a religious tradition and in relation to a divinely inspired code of morals. Do you understand me, David, or are the words too big?
No, I understand, Father, but I'm not sure I agree.
You're not sure? Why?
Because I know the difference between good and evil.
Yes, I'm sure you do. But how do you know the difference?
I just know it.
My father would smile as well he might. We had a rather good example to follow quite close to home. It's one of the advantages of being a rabbi's son. When I was about 12, my father began a series of Sunday morning lectures on the Hebrew prophets to the older boys and girls of his congregation. Rather, to my surprise, my father also insisted on the class memorizing whole chapters of Isaiah in the original Hebrew.
And to help you study, a prize will be offered to the boy or girl who can memorize the greatest number of verses.
Every night as I lay in bed before falling asleep, I would repeat to myself as much as I had already learned.
Comfort ye, my people, saith the Lord.
Despite my generally bad memory, I found it easy to memorize the rich, sonorous Hebrew phrases of the book.
Thus saith the Lord.
Starting with chapter 40, I learned most of the book of
Isaiah.
As the end of the term came closer, my father displayed a special interest in my progress.
Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thy...
David.
Yes, Father?
You're memorizing a great deal of Isaiah, aren't you?
I'm up to chapter 58.
58.
That's 18 chapters, I know.
I see. That's a good many chapters.
Well, I think I can learn them all to the end, by the end of the term.
I don't believe any of the others know anywhere near that much, David.
If they'd worked at it, they could.
Yes, I know. David, it may be difficult for you to understand why I say this, but why don't you try to memorize a little less?
I hadn't the slightest idea what his embarrassment in the matter was. All I knew was that my nearest competitor had memorized only half as many chapters of Isaiah as I had. Finally, the end of term came.
The prize for memorizing the greatest portion of the book of Isaiah will now be presented.
I waited confidently to hear my name called by my father.
Will Herman Levy please step forward?
I could hardly believe my ears. All I could think to myself in the midst of my pain and confusion was...
Wait till we get home. Just wait till we get home.
David, I know it's hard for you to understand, but what would the congregation have said?
I don't care what they would have said.
You have to care. We all have to care. You did get the second prize, David. It was the best I could do under the circumstances.
I tied for second with a girl who hardly knew one chapter.
David, you don't understand. You don't need a prize to study. Some of your classmates do.
It was a contest. I'm not responsible for my classmates.
To a certain extent, we're all responsible for our classmates, David. There's a verse in Isaiah on that, too. They helped everyone his neighbor, and everyone said to his brother, "Be of good courage."
I'm glad to help my brother. It still doesn't seem fair.
Don't you understand, David? It would have been embarrassing, very embarrassing, if you had won the first prize.
Why? That's all I want to know. Why?
Because you're the rabbi's son. You see, David, there are advantages and disadvantages to being a rabbi's son.
Father is gone now, but when I think of him, I think of the advantages of having been a rabbi's son. We were not always in agreement, but his faith and his convictions, I'm sure, helped to shape whatever kind of person I may be. Once he was asked whether he believed in personal immortality, a question on which I do not think he ever committed himself. He smiled and said,
"One lives most effectively after death in the memories of those whom one has loved and taught."
I think he was right. And in these later years, as I look back to the two worlds in which I grew up, the world of picturesque Scotland and the world of Jewish tradition, I think of him often and deeply. For it has come to me as I grow older that for my father, the two worlds of my Scottish Jewish childhood, the two worlds of social and religious responsibility, were firmly and indissolubly one.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Max Gruenwald, Rabbi of Congregation B'nai Israel of Millburn, New Jersey. Dr. Gruenwald.
We live in a world in which it is easier to cross continents and oceans than to overcome the distance between human beings. This applies to groups and nations, and sometimes even to father and son, two generations drifting apart. To live in two worlds then appears to be the property of a select few. Yet, it has been a distinctive trait of Jewish history and of Jewish men and women who traveled in it that they took their full share in two spheres and were rooted in two traditions in which they moved freely with understanding, full participation, and undivided affection. It was obviously a wide definition and broad application which they gave to the word of Ecclesiastes, also God has set the world in their heart. Bringing two worlds together so that they grow into one became a reality in our people's history, a reality with its mystery and danger, with its creative joy and profound disappointment. Without it, we would have to strike many a chapter of the annals of our people and of the story of mankind as well.
Thank you, Dr. Gruenwald. Eternal Light Drama Today, Two Worlds, was written by Mark Siegel. It is adapted from the book of the same name, written by David Deitches and published by Harcourt Brace and Company. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Roger DeCoven as the narrator, with Bobby Alford, Guy Rep, Michael Mann, Peter Fernandez, and Stuart McIntosh. This is Mel Brandt. The program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America and is directed by Daniel Sutter. This is the NBC Radio Network.